Let's bow for prayer. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. What is the most extravagant thing you have ever done? Not necessarily for yourself either, for someone else. I had a friend who told me at one point that he once, as an extravagant gesture, bought someone 50 long-stemmed roses for Valentine's Day. And with that, tried to essentially insist that having received them, she now owed him a Valentine's supper. And she should dress in her finest, and if she didn't have that, to buy something. After which he would then take her to a very posh restaurant. I understand that she did that, but had nothing to do with him after that. But that's not the kind of extravagant gesture I mean. Extravagance is not necessarily known to be a particularly Christian virtue. In our more thrifty or frugal Mennonite Anabaptist ways, we tend to think that extravagance is something we should try to avoid. A penny saved is a penny earned, I've heard said far too many times. Or I remember one time walking on the street in Vancouver and a penny falling out of my pocket when I reached in for something else, and someone behind me picked it up and tapped me on the shoulder and gave it to me and said, "If you take care of the pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves." We're told that we should save money rather than spend it. Or we should invest it rather than just let it sit. And now in our time, we are told that consumption in itself is more a negative commentary on our society rather than something which we need to do in order to keep our economy functioning. Consumption is superfluous to our needs. Moreover, it's bad for the environment. Not only that, but there is something profoundly troubling for us when we witness some seemingly undeserving person getting something that seems to be so out of scale with what they, quote, deserve. How many times do we read of somebody who has won the lottery and they have no concept how to deal with money? Well, they wouldn't have even bought a ticket if they'd known what to do with money, right? So just the fact that they bought a ticket meant that they did not know what to do with money. And therefore, what did they do? But they won a prize, not only a prize, but if you're thinking of Powerball, hundreds of millions of dollars. The extravagant gesture. Well, we read of one extravagant gesture today in our text. If you look at John chapter 12, verses 1 to 8, you will find here something which seems in some ways to be very out of place with what we think is appropriate behavior. Now, Jesus has been staying with his disciples at this point First of all, if you look just a couple of chapters before chapter 12, you read of the raising of Lazarus. Jesus has come to Bethany and found that Lazarus is already dead. He'd been told earlier that Lazarus was in imminent danger of dying, and he better come quickly. And he delayed, either himself or others delayed him. He got there late, and Lazarus had already died. And he'd already been in the tomb for several days. And Jesus raised him. But now, with the incredible tumult that had been organized around this whole event, Jesus and his disciples knew that they shouldn't stay there because there was already something going on with respect to people wanting him out of the way. And so they retired to another place, more toward the desert, in a little village called Ephraim. But now, 6 days before Passover, Jesus comes to Bethany, where a huge meal is prepared for him by Lazarus and his sisters Mary and Martha. And all three are listed in our account. Lazarus, he's the man. Unfortunately, it's a very patriarchal society, and so he's the man. He gets to sit at table with Jesus and the disciples. Mary, as is her wont, she is the server. She is serving the meal. And where's Mary? Mary comes in to the room where everyone else is, breaks open a bottle of incredibly expensive perfume. And if you want to try to place that in our terms, a year's wages, well, let's say $30,000, one bottle. That's not much of a year's wage, but that's perhaps more something we can get a hold of. And she begins to pour it on Jesus' feet and wipe it with her hair, spread it around. The sheer audacity of this act. First of all, it's an inappropriate behavior for a man to receive this at the hands of a woman in a public place. First of all, they're not married to each other. And secondly, it is public. It goes against their whole cultural fabric. And then secondly, Judas, the treasurer, starts making comments like, what a wasteful act. We could have used this money by giving away or selling this perfume and doing so much good with it. How many people could we have lifted out of poverty? How many people could we have fed for a month? And on and on. But Jesus rebukes Judas. And in John's gospel, Jesus gives some reasons why it is not inappropriate. And John is trying to do here, within the text of this gospel, he's trying to do something here to prepare us for what's going to happen. Jesus says to all of those gathered, that what Mary has done is the beginning of something that will continue over the next number of days, culminating in Jesus' death. And he's saying that what Mary has done is to do this while Jesus is still alive. One, because her love for him and for what he is about to do is only a brief token of what Jesus' love for her and the rest of humanity will be. And then Jesus says, listen, and today I'm here. Tomorrow I won't be. And at that point, all of this will be lost on the one she's doing it for. The poor you will always have with you. Me, she won't. What is happening here? First of all, Jesus knew that he was going to his death. It's already implicit in the words that Jesus says. It says there that in John's gospel that Jerusalem authorities were already looking for him, that they were already wanting to arrest him. They were already wanting to try him. Not only that, but if you go a couple of verses past our text, Lazarus was also in danger because of this big kerfuffle about his own raising. He was also becoming dangerous to those who were wanting to have perhaps a different person involved in this idea of messiahship or someone who they could trust. And so Jesus knew that his trip to Jerusalem was a place from which he would never emerge. He was going there to die. Secondly, what's going on here is this extraordinary gift of love. Mary had experienced much as a disciple of Jesus. She already had understood that what she was doing as Jesus' disciple, as a woman, was as important, as good as any man. Jesus had lifted her out of her own kind of boundedness or bondedness and lifted her to the level of equality. Her dignity had been raised. Her life had been renewed. And as somebody who had affirmed her in this way, her desire to follow Jesus as any of the other disciples, she spared nothing in return. She gave Jesus everything she had to give, and she did it in public. And then third, Jesus went willingly and knowingly to his death. Jesus understood that his purposes were much greater than just a pure vindication of his ministry. His death was going to be necessary for God's purposes to be completed as well. Others would expect Jesus to lead them in victory over the corrupt Herod and the hated Romans. And Jesus knew that he would die because of their disappointment in him. Jesus knew that God's way countered every human way. And Mary's extravagant gift was her response for Jesus' extravagant gift. Some commentators have described John's gospel as Jesus' passion with an extended introduction. But John intends the reader to understand that Jesus' life was destined to end as it did. That Jesus knew to what he was going, and not only accepted it, but embraced it. In other words, Jesus was God's extravagant gift to us. Later in John 15:9, we read, "Greater love hath no one than that he lay his life down for his friends." The movie Babette's Feast came into public domain. I don't know if any of you have ever seen that movie. Some of you have, I think. If you haven't, I encourage you to read it or to look at it. It's a wonderful movie. A small religious community in the northern barren coast of Denmark receives as a guest, as some kind of person washed up on the shore, as it were, an exile from Paris, France, with only a letter to give her commendation for them. Without anything, she asks if she can cook for the two elderly sisters who are giving a kind of leadership in the absence of a father who is long past his capability of giving leadership. They say they can't pay her, but she offers to cook for them for free if she can stay with them. And after 14 years, she finds out that she has won a lottery and that she now has been given 10,000 francs. She decides that what she would like to do is to give the community an incredible meal, the kind she used to give when she was in another life. The sisters reluctantly say yes, and so she does. But as they see all these strange, exotic foods come into their community, they start to wonder whether they have made a terrible mistake. But they go on with it, and the dinner proves to be a great success. In fact, one of the things that one of the kind of consequences of this meal is that old enmities that have arisen between people who have been too long together and in too small a place, those are eventually just kind of evaporated and kind of dispelled. And people start to apologize and they begin to somehow come together again in friendship. When the meal is over, the sisters know that she could leave at any time because she was obviously so skilled. And so they just say, we're sorry, but that they'll be sorry to lose her. And she tells them, she has spent all her money. She has nothing left. And so she will be forced to stay with them. Would that be all right? Her gratitude for their kindness was shown in her extravagant gesture. Mary knew somehow that Jesus' life had given her everything, everything worth living for. She knew that Jesus' life would lead to his death. But she was willing to do that while he was still alive. So as we go into communion now, I would urge you to think about this extravagant gesture on the part of Jesus for us that we will be celebrating in the next couple of weeks. What does that mean for you? Christ died for us to show us what God is like. Christ died for us so that in our place we could taste the bread of life and sip from the living water ourselves. That is what communion is for us. I would invite you to think on that as we participate together. Amen.